update on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Hello, welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. As usual, we'll start with that all-American creation called the disclaimer. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. So don't rely on anything I'm telling you. I'm just here to provide you with a little bit of generalized knowledge about the world around you and the legal ins and outs and things to watch out for. I hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving. I know we did. I made my first turkey on a big green egg. I'd never done that before, and it worked out. Had a couple little glitches in there, and some good friends over. I hope you all had a good time and stayed safe. Today, we're going to talk first about death and dying. Well, not really. We're going to talk about estate planning, which is what happens, what you should do before you die. And then from there, I don't know where we'll end up. We might talk about some of the ins and outs of buying a house and title reports and title insurance and those types of things. And so I know it doesn't sound terribly exciting, but I think some of you out there might find it interesting. And also it might save you some money, both your family and yourself. And other than that, we'll be back right after that and we'll just jump right into it.
This year, don't bother with that letter to Santa. We've got you covered at Northern Quest with a sleigh full of giveaways. From our gift tree giveaway and New Year's Eve giveaway to our $48,000 holiday bonus and more, it all adds up to over $100,000 in holiday cash and prizes, which would look good under anybody's tree. See all the ways you can win at northernquest.com.
An open letter to the man currently figuring out what to get his wife for Christmas.
Hey, dude, take it from me. Look, I've bought a lot of gifts for my wife through the years, and yes, mistakes were made. So this year, I'm recommending a gift card to Windfall, the home, outdoor, and lifestyle store at Northern Quest. It's full of awesome, one-of-a-kind gifts that aren't toasters.
Give the gift of Northern Quest. Stop by or visit northernquest.com for details.
It's that time of year again, America, when we celebrate family, friends, and all the things that bring us joy together. But holiday cheer doesn't just happen. It's something each of us has to make. This year, Ford wants to help you make more joy than ever before. Whether that means having smart towing, like the available Dynamic Hitch Assist on Ford F-150, or just more room for grandma with Explorer's spacious third-row seating. Visit buyfordnow.com today and see how easy we've made it to get the new Ford you've always wanted. Only at your local Northwest Ford dealer.
The 2020 harvest is nearing completion here at the Pondere Winery, and it's so exciting to taste what's in store for the next vintage of our award-winning wines. In the meantime, we have the 2018 Syrah to share with you as November's Wine of the Month. It's almost the holiday season, and what a better gift than a wine club membership. It's free to sign up and saves you money on all wine purchases. Our kitchen continues to put out delicious meals, and remember, takeout is always an option. Come see us at 301 Cedar Street in downtown Sandpoint, or visit us on our website, powine.com. The Pondere Winery, where happy hour is every hour.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
KSPT 1400, KBFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
Hi, welcome back to Common Law. I'm Arthur Beislein. I appreciate KPST putting the station announcements on so I don't have to read them incorrectly like I did apparently the entire time last week. But anyway, let's talk about estate planning. And what is estate planning? That is what happens to what you own after you pass away. And I want to start off with another misconception that I've heard a number of times. A lot of it is put forth by the trust companies that we'll get to in a minute. Is an estate plan absolutely essential? No. If you pass away and you don't have any estate plan and you don't have any will or trust or anything else that says what's going to happen, the government will not get your money. That's just a myth. I mean, there is, if you truly have no living relative, and I mean no living relative, then yes, that will occur. But I mean, really, no living relative. I don't know if anybody knows anybody out there that that would be the case for. So no, it's not essential. But is it a really good idea? Absolutely. Nobody likes to talk about it. Obviously, you don't want to talk about dying. And you really don't want to talk about the idea that maybe after you die, your children or your other heirs, whoever you want to give things to, are not going to get along. Nobody likes to think that. 99% of the time, it works out just fine. And, you know, the heirs, the siblings, whoever, they figure it out. But when it doesn't, then it tears your family apart and it lines the lawyer's pockets with lots and lots of money. So a will is easy to do. You can even write it out in your own hand. I don't recommend that, but I'll tell you that. When people hire me to do a will, they call me and they say, well, we're getting ready to jump on a plane and head out, and can you have a will done for us in a day or two? Which usually you can. But what I tell them is, handwrite out what you want to have happen after you pass away, sign it, and I mean handwrite the whole thing. Don't type it out. You got to handwrite the whole thing, and that is a will in the state of Idaho. It's called a holographic will, and it's just as enforceable as any other will. I don't recommend doing it that way. There's some provisions and things you need to know to include. But if you send that to me in the mail, then if you happen to pass away between the time you give me the information and when I can get it done, well, then we have a will, which has it's actually occurred to me. One of my very first cases, I went and did this lady's will, and I had it on my desk and getting ready to write it, and they said she's in the hospital. She had a heart attack. And I said, look, it's done. Let me come down there and have her sign it. And they said, no, she'll be fine. Well, she died that night, and her will gave everything to 2 out of her 15 children. And so when she passed away without a will, now everything went to all 15 kids. So that's why I say handwrite it out. If nothing else, just handwrite it out. But I recommend go see an attorney and have them help you with it. What I want to talk about now is a trust. Every person without exception asks me when they come in to talk about their estate plan if they need a trust. And what is a trust? And lots of people have them. I'm sure everybody out there knows somebody who has one, or you maybe have one yourself. Well, a trust is not a thing. A trust is a relationship. It is a relationship between somebody who has what we call the beneficial interest of property and somebody who has the legal interest in property. A trust relationship splits those two things apart. And put it another way, my wife and I own our house. Legally, we own it, but we also have the right to use it and enjoy it. Well, in a trust, you separate those two things. So the trustee would own the house, but the trustee has to manage it for the benefit of whoever the beneficiaries are of the trust arrangement. So that's what a trust is. So why do you need a trust generally? Well, in the past, they were used for basically avoiding, well, not really avoiding. You can't avoid taxes. All you can do is kick them down the road a bit. And that's what they would do. They had these things called pour-over trust. And, you know, they're not as big of a reason to do anymore because that they were done when the estate tax limit was around $600,000, meaning that the first $600,000 of your estate wasn't taxed. $600,000. Well, I think now, and I don't do tax, but I think it's like $10 million. So, you know, not many of us out there are really in need of a trust to avoid or delay paying taxes. But again, the $10 million thing could change in a month. I mean, Congress can change that at any time. That's why it's $10 million and not $600,000, and they could do that again. So I don't do tax, and I'm not giving you advice anyway, just to remind you, but that's just something to consider. So do you need a trust? Probably not. Trusts don't really accomplish much of anything other than in certain circumstances. What happens with trust is this. A trust acts more or less like a will. So instead of having a will that says, when I die, here's where my things go, you have a trust. For example, my wife and I could have a trust that said, here's what happens when the last of us passes away, then the trustee distributes whatever's left, just like a personal representative would in the case of a will. So that is the main reason people put forth for starting a trust. It's, quote, to avoid probate. Now, what is probate? Probate is the other way of getting rid of your assets after you pass away. Probate is a formal court proceeding where you have an individual who you've generally nominated in a will, and if you don't have a will, then somebody who is, you know, fit to be your personal representative, which basically means that they just stand in your shoes. Dead people can't sign deeds, so you need to have somebody who can so they can transfer your house. That's what probate is. And probate is almost without exception, extremely simple and not very expensive. The only time it's a problem is if there's a dispute amongst the heirs. Well, if there's a dispute, a trust isn't going to be any more help to stop that from happening than a will is. So a lot of these trust companies, they peddle these trusts on the idea that you should use them to avoid probate. Well, avoiding probate is not always a good idea. And what do I mean by that? Well, I guess the best way to put it is to give you an example. Is I had a client who came to see me, and his parents had a trust. And after the death of the last of the parents, then the successor trustee, his brother, he was to distribute the balance of the trust account. He was to take the cash out of a certain account, and he got to keep that. And then he was to give the house to the other brother. Well, what the trustee, the successor trustee, saw was that he got the cash and the brother got the house. So what do you think the successor trustee did? Because he had the power to do it. Well, he sold the house and turned it into cash and then tried to keep it all. So, you know, that was thankfully just a one phone call thing. And the other brother didn't care that he had sold the house. He did a good job selling it and got a good price. But it was a phone call and they got it straightened out. But that kind of thing would not happen in a probate, meaning that if you had a will instead of a trust, because you can't do anything with the will until a court appoints you to do it. And when you're appointed pursuant to the will, you have to provide notice to everybody else who might be a potential heir or taker under the will. So in that case, for example, the brother would have had to have one, be appointed. Two, he would have had to go on to see an attorney to do that. And then if he would have told the attorney his plan, the attorney would have advised against it and just said, you can't do that. And then three, if he was going to do it, he would have had to notify the other people what he was doing. And it just, it never would have happened. My point is this. When you have a will, you put somebody between you and, well, not you. You put somebody between the person who's supposed to be doing with your estate what you want them to and the world. When you have a trust, there's no supervision. You can set them up with supervision. You can set them up to co-trustees. There's lots of ways to avoid this problem. But for the most part, the trust doesn't really save you any money. And as a matter of fact, it's more likely to breed litigation than just a simple will. And, you know, probate is a filing fee. I mean, it's form-driven practice that paralegals generally do. We review what they do and make sure it's done right, and it always is. And it's generally never a problem unless there's a dispute. But on that note, I should note that, or on that subject, that probate, lawyers used to charge a percentage for probates. So Yeah, avoiding it was a good idea because it's they're so simple. You're making 3% of a $10 million estate, or you're making 3% of a $500 estate. Unless there's a problem, the work's pretty much the same. So, but that's gone. Lawyers don't do that anymore. We just charge by the hour for them. So, are all trusts bad? No. Here's what I think is the very best use for one, is if you want to make sure that your estate benefits your kids and that they're taken care of, the best thing to do is set up what we call a spendthrift trust. And when, you know, clients will come into me and they'll be worth a lot of money and they'll say, well, I say, well, what happens if you pass away before your kid's 18? Oh, well, we should probably, you know, give the money to whoever in trust until he turns 18. And I say, well, you want an 18-year-old to have $7 million. And they're like, no, I never really thought of that. not a good idea. And so a spendthrift trust is basically you give your estate to a trustee, which means that your kids have all the benefit of the money, but they don't have any control over it, which means that if they think opening a coffee shop somewhere is a really good idea, well, they have to sell the trustee on that idea before they get the money to do it. If and more importantly, if one of their friends thinks it's a good idea, well, then they can just say, I'm sorry, I can't give you the money because I don't have control of it. That's what a spendthrift trust does. It, in essence, protects those assets from any creditors or anybody they even hurt. For example, if your child, you pass away and there's a spendthrift trust until they're 20, 25, 35, whatever, and they run over somebody and severely injure somebody and get sued and get a multi-million dollar judgment against them, they can't touch the money in that trust. They can't get at it. So that is why that's the best use of one that I think is because you can, you know, go to your grave knowing that your kid will have a roof over their head at a minimum or whatever you want to have them have. But doing a trust for any other reason is kind of a waste of money. And I mean, other than tax purposes, but, you know, avoiding probate is not the reason to do it. So if somebody's trying to sell you on doing a trust, then you really should make them explain to you why you want to spend that money. Because they don't help. And they've been peddled for a long time as something that everybody should have. And I think we'll go to break now. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about trust, talk about what kinds of things you should consider when you're doing a trust. And we'll be back in a minute.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Taylor and Sons Chevrolet.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor and Sons Chevrolet, serving the greater Sandpoint area. Taylor and Sons shops the competition each and every day in both our sales and service departments. What we strive for is transparency for our customers. I hate to say it, but right now a lot of North Idaho residents are looking for the best price on a set of quality winter tires. Taylor & Sons is the premier location to find exactly the tires you're looking for at the best price. Taylor & Sons stocks and sells all major brands such as Hankook, Michelin, Goodyear, Bridgestone, and BFG. Taylor & Sons offers a 30-day price match guarantee on most major brands of tires. If you find a better price within 30 days of purchase, Taylor & Sons will refund the difference. In addition to the price match guarantee, Taylor & Sons is offering up to a $100 mail-in rebate on select brands of tires now through November 30th. All of the work is performed in our clean, state-of-the-art facility. You can view all of our current service specials online at tschevy.com. For guest-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
Let Thick and Thin Beams of Bonner's Ferry, your hometown sawmill, help you spruce up your home with new flooring, a decorative mantel or desktop, or beams up to 44 feet long. Just about anything you can dream up, the guys at TNT can help design. Be sure to check out Thick and Thin Lumber first for all of your wood product needs. For fast, reliable service and competitive pricing, come see the mill at 4355 Cow Creek Road or check out their website, tntbeams.com. For local wood products, think Thick and Thin Beams of Bonner's Ferry.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, especially for sales. And Larson's has the prices you've been waiting for during their annual Big Bird Sale. Doors open Friday at 7 a.m. Listen to these deals. Men's and women's North 15 Fleece Lounge Pants, $6.99. Men's Maxell Sherpa-lined Fleece Jacket, $29.99. American Mammoth Women's Aloe-Infused Socks, $6.99. And Men's Stillwater Shirt Jack, $19.99. Larson's Big Bird Sale, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in downtown Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry.
Hi, this is Brian Ivey, service manager at Pierce Auto Center in beautiful Sagal, Idaho. It's time for our annual food drive. For the month of November, you can get a 1995 oil change with a donation of at least two cans of food. Without a donation, an oil change will be $24.95, and $5 of that will be donated to the food bank. Please remember our certified techs work on all makes and models, including Subaru and Toyota. Call today to schedule an appointment. Pierce Auto Center.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Hi, welcome back to Common Law. This is Arthur Beislein, your host. We've been discussing estate planning, and most recently we were talking about trusts and what they're good for and what they're not good for. And if you're not bored, you're probably not paying attention. No, I mean, it's not boring. It's kind of boring, but it's important stuff. So anyway, I mentioned this thing called the Spendthrift Trust, a way to give your property in such a way is that your kids can't blow it until a certain age or ever, for that matter. And meaning that if they get sued, that whoever sues them can't get at that money. I want to make one thing clear to you all. That does not work for your own trust, meaning that if you think you can give your assets to somebody else in a spendthrift trust to protect them from your creditors, that doesn't work. It's still viewed as your property when it comes to the ability to get at it. Spendthrift trust only works if you are giving your property to a trustee for the benefit of some other person. And as long as we're talking about trying to hide your assets or protect them, you know, again, even if you did it that way, there are ways to undo transactions if you do them at a time when you know somebody might be coming after you. I just put it to my clients this way. There really isn't any effective way to protect your assets. If you have them, eventually somebody's going to find them. So anyway, let's get back to talking about a trust. If you're going to do a trust, what kinds of things should you consider? Well, primarily you got to consider what is the goal for the use of your money after you are gone. Trust agreements can be very specific or very vague about what the trustee is supposed to do, or they can even be non-existent. If I hand somebody a $10,000 check and say, this is in, I'm giving you this in trust for the benefit of my daughter, and I just say it out loud, well, a trust comes into existence at that point. Of course, I don't recommend doing that. Writings are always better. So by vague, I mean you can just say that. You could just write out something that says, I give it to whoever in trust for the benefit of my daughter or my kid. Or by specific, you can say, I give it in trust for the benefit of my kid. The trustee shall first expend whatever sums are necessary for the continuing education of my child. By education, I mean attendance at an accredited college. In addition, as part of my child's education, the trustee shall provide for trips around the world during the time my child is in college. I've seen them that specific. You can say the trustee shall not invest in anything other than treasury bills. The trustee shall not invest in the stock market. I mean, all the things that you would like to see happen with your money, that's all you need to know. And you just write those down. And then if you want to do a spendthrift trust, go see an attorney and have them draft it up. But it's not as easy as it sounds to sit down and lay that stuff out. But if you're going to do a trust, that's what you really need to consider is, you know, what do I want the trustee to do with this money? And you also need to consider what happens if the person who I want to benefit from the money passes away. I mean, it's just really the same thing as a will. It just has more of the detail because you're instructing somebody how to manage your money after you pass away for the benefit of somebody else that you care about. So that's what you would think about if you're going to do a trust. But again, carefully consider if you think you need a trust, you really need to figure out why. Because unfortunately, lawyers charge a lot for these things. And if they're not necessary, it's just money you don't need to spend. So what kinds of things also should you think about in estate planning? If you have minor children, you need to make a plan for them. Meaning, set up a trust for their benefit and determine what age, if any, you want them to have full access to this money. I'd never recommend anybody under the age of 25 have any access to any amount of money that is substantial enough that they could blow it. And I wouldn't have given myself, I'm not sure that I should have any money now, I probably don't. But at 25, no, I definitely did not need to have a pile of money. So that's one, figure out your trust. Two, figure out who takes care of your children if you pass away. And these are called guardians. And what is a guardian? Well, a guardian is someone who's in charge of a person, their well-being, for lack of a better term. They're not in charge of their money. They're in charge of their health, safety, whatever. And not just anybody. It has to be a minor, meaning under the age of 18, or it has to be somebody who's been adjudged to be incapable of managing their own affairs. That's a guardian. Now, you probably also have heard of a conservator, which guardian, conservator often are in the same sentence. The applications look the same. But a conservator is in charge of the money, much like a trustee. So they're not as, you know, I'd set up a trust for your kids and pick a guardian and pick a backup guardian. Quite often people are not real willing to take on somebody else's children. I've had it actually occur where we had to find somebody else to take them. So have a backup or two or three. Because if you're not real clear on this and you have other relatives around, there's a good chance they're going to fight about who should be in charge, which is the exact opposite of what I just said, that some people don't want the burden, but then there's other people that insist on it. And they will fight, and it'll cause trouble, and it'll waste money, and it'll confuse your children. So figure out who you want to take care of your kids. And beyond that, you know, where do you want your money to go? These kind of simple things. And the other thing you should have is a plan for what happens if you're incapacitated, but you haven't passed away. Sometimes called a living will, a healthcare directive. Maybe you've seen these before where you have three options. If I can't communicate, you know, give me water and nourishment. Option two is give me water, no nourishment. Option three is don't give me anything. And you want to have those around too, because I don't know if you all remember the Terry Schiavo incident of so many years ago, that lady on life support in Florida, and some relatives wanted to take her off, so I wanted to put her back on. And just recently there was a case in Texas where, and this was a minor, so it's not as applicable, but, you know, deciding what to do at that point, unless there's a directive from the person whose life you have in your hands, is very, very difficult. And it's, nobody wants to have to make that choice without some sort of direction on how to do it. So you should have a plan for that too. And again, these are very simple documents for the most part. As I mentioned on the show last time, I do these things for free for veterans because they're not hard and they're pretty straightforward things. And for the most part, you should just get it done. And I don't recommend doing anything off of the internet ever. But again, back to it, if you don't have a will and you want one, at least handwrite it out and stick it somewhere where somebody will find it. And since we're talking about life planning in general, the last show I mentioned that the phrase possession is 9/10 of the law, that's total nonsense. But then I said, other than people who are cohabitating in the state of Idaho. And I think I should follow up on that because I can't remember if I said this last time or not, but if you're living with somebody and you're not married and you're accumulating things, you need to have an agreement. And if I said it again last time, then I'm saying it again now. Because In the absence of a written agreement, you will have no recourse at the law to unwind your affairs. And it's not, granted, nobody wants to talk about breaking up. Similar to business people, quite often don't want to talk about, well, what happens if you and I don't get along anymore in this company? And, you know, I always say you need to have a writing. If there's more than one owner of anything, you have to have some kind of agreement that controls how things go if you don't agree or even if you do agree. And, you know, people are, for whatever reason, very apprehensive about asking somebody who they're doing business with for a written agreement. And they think it will offend them. Well, what I say is, one, if they're offended by the fact that you think you should have it written down, well, you really ought to reconsider who you're doing business with. Handshake deals are great. They work out a lot of times. Quite obviously, billions of transactions occur every single day without a written agreement. But when they don't work out, then everybody wastes money on attorneys. So just get it done. But if you do feel bad and you want to, if you think you're going to offend them, this is what I say to them. Just say, look, you and I get along. What if I die? You want to do business with my wife? And then they kind of see the light. It's not really about you two getting along. It's about everybody who might not get along if one or both of you passes away. So, or you get disabled or whatever. You need to have it written down. And that applies with any kind of relationship you have. If you're married, there's a whole set of laws that cover that. If you're not married, there's nothing. So you need to write it down. Just take the time, draft it up, go spend a couple $100, have a lawyer look at it, or don't. I mean, it's not complicated. You can just say, look, if we go splitsville, we add up all the personal property we've accumulated. If there's anything that somebody brought to the relationship, you know, that's clearly theirs, like their big giant stereo or whatever, you can say, you know, that's his. I acknowledge it's his. And because these things don't have titles. And as I said last time, even if they do have titles, it still doesn't really control who actually owns it. It just says who really has the ability to actually do something with it because you have the title. So anyway, make sure that you just do it in writing. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, lawyers make so much money off the attitude of, you know, back when I was a kid, my dad did a handshake deal. Well, yeah, that's great, you know, and a lot, like I said, a lot of those work. But when they don't work, you are pouring money down a rat hole called litigation. And it's, you don't want to be there. It is, you might as well pile your money up and light it on fire to keep warm. I mean, go to Vegas with it. At least in Vegas, in theory, it's supposed to be, you know, fair, random. And like I say, in my job, you can do everything you're supposed to and you still lose. So anyway, that's all I have on estate planning. Nobody emailed me last week with any questions. Again, it's commonlaw, the number 7, letter B, at gmail.com. I'd be happy to address anything anybody wants to send me, but I didn't get anything. So, well, I guess we'll move on to the next topic. Buying property. And I'll start off with apologizing to my realtor friends that might be listening for saying this, but if you already know what you want to buy, do not hire a realtor. There's just no reason to. You hire a buyer's agent to help you find something that you like. That's what realtors have. They have access to information and they know things and they can find things. But if you see the neighbor's house for sale and you want it, don't go hire a realtor. You don't. That's what a buyer's agent does, is find you the house. You already found it. So you don't need to hire a realtor. Now, what do you do? Well, if your neighbor has it listed, it's probably listed at with a 6% commission. The seller has to pay a 6% commission. Now, if you go hire your own realtor, your buyer's agent, then that 6% gets split, 3% to your agent and 3% to their agent. And so if you don't have an agent, then you can go to the seller and say you need to tell your agent to lower their commission to 3%. And right off the bat, you're lowering the price you're going to have to pay for the property because the realtors aren't taking as much off the top. So does that mean that you should handle the transaction alone? No, just go hire an attorney to handle it. You don't have to have a realtor, and I think that's a misconception out there, that you have to have a realtor in order to do a real estate transaction, and you don't. You can use a lawyer, but And I don't know why more people don't, because you're thinking, oh, well, that sounds like a good idea. Let me go hire an attorney to buy a house. Well, think of it this way. If you bought a $300,000 house and the commission is 3%, I don't know, what is that, $9,000? I just can't conceive of any real estate transaction for just to simply buy on a house that would cost $9,000 in legal fees, or even half, probably less, especially like an in-town transaction or something like that. It's just, you're never going to spend that much money. It's just not necessary. Sometimes it will get more complicated and it will cost you more money. But if you have a realtor and it's going to get complicated and cost you more money, that's going to happen no matter what. So meaning that if it's that complicated, a lawyer is going to be involved at some point anyway. So apologies to my realtor friends. And I'm not saying realtors don't provide a valuable service. I'm just saying that a buyer's agent service is finding what you want. And if you already know what it is, well, there's no reason to pay somebody to help you fill out forms in a box when you can have an attorney do that. All right. Anyway, what else do you want to talk about with buying a piece of property? The inspections. Get them done. And here's the main thing before we go to break that I want to talk about with inspections. These home inspection companies' contracts, almost without exception, have a clause which limits their damages if they make a mistake. And that limitation is generally whatever you paid them to do the inspection. So you pay them to do an inspection, and they miss the fact that the foundation is crumbling and to fix it will cost $30,000, but all you get back from them is the $200 you paid for the inspection. So if you're going to hire an inspection company, read the agreement very carefully. If you see that limitation, then I wouldn't hire them because they're not really providing you anything. The point when you hire a professional is that if the professional messes up, you can look to the professional to fix the problem. And anybody who is not willing to back up what they're selling you, then you don't want to hire that person for anything, you know, inspection or any other thing. All right, and we'll come back and we will get to, since nobody sent an answer into last week's essay contest, that means I get to answer it, and I am really looking forward to it, and we'll be right back with Common Law after this.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church. Proverbs 27 verse 1 states, "Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth." The simple truth in this is we should not boast of what tomorrow is going to bring, because our circumstances can change drastically from one day to the next, and it's not in our control. My, how the truth of this verse is demonstrated by the current set of circumstances that surround us. Hebrews 13 verse 8 states this though, "Jesus Christ the same, yesterday and today and forever." Friend, my hope today is not in the ever-changing circumstances around me, but in the unchanging, living Son of God who lives within me. He is the anchor of my soul. Is He the anchor of your soul? If not, He can be and should be. If I can assist you in any way, please contact me by texting or calling 208-267-3746.
At the Co-op this week, we are all about staying warm and dry. We stock North Idaho Energy Logs and Pellets. We have plenty of both, so come on in and get them. Now is the time to make sure your exterior wall faucets and hydrants are insulated. We stock tube insulation for pipes, heat tape, and foam fill. If you have questions about winterizing your home, just ask us. We have stock tank heaters in a variety of sizes and styles, including a floating option. We also have heated pet water dishes and bird bath de-icers. In the tack section, we have equine turnout blankets in a variety of sizes and colors to choose from to keep your horse warm and cozy. Keeping warm and dry has never been easier with products from the Co-op Gas and Supply Company, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, where neighbors have been helping neighbors since 1934. 208-263-6820.
Great savings continue through December 1st with Bi-Mart's Black Friday Savings Book.
It's 16 pages packed full of everything you'll need to help you prep for the holidays, along with great savings on Christmas gifts for everyone in the family. Our employee owners are working hard to make sure all our stores are safe, clean, and ready when you are. Stop in and save with BuyMart's Black Friday Savings Guide, out now and posted at BuyMart.com.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Missed a noon hour? Check out the audio at our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Hi, welcome back to Common Law. This is Arthur Beislein, your host. And let's get to the essay contest that nobody answered, so I answer it for you. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. It is a non-partisan issue. It's actually what we would call anti-partisan issue, meaning it's both political parties are guilty of this, and it is the answer to the question, what is wrong with Congress? Or put another way, they're not doing their job out there. Well, I have an answer for you for what they're not doing, and it's called voting. See, that's what they're supposed to do in Congress is vote. And they don't do a lot of that. And they don't like to do it because then you all pay attention to what they did. And, you know, that's no fun for them to have to answer for what they're doing. So the essay question last week was Congress or the Senate passes a rule, which we all know they already, I don't know if it's still there, but they have, that says it takes 60 out of 100 people to approve a presidential Supreme Court nominee. And I said, is that rule constitutional? Well, here's the answer. The Appointments Clause, the first sentence of the Appointments Clause is called the Treaties Clause. And that thing says the president makes a treaty and it requires two-thirds of the Senate to approve that treaty. The very next sentence says the president appoints whoever and the Senate approves him. Now, the Constitution is actually a legal document that is subject to all the other rules of interpretation of any other legal document. And that phrase that I gave you last week, inclusius unius exclusio alterius, that's Latin for when a couple people sit down and smart people and really consider something and write it down, when they say something in one place and they don't say it in the other, then you can't read it to be in the other place. Meaning, when they say it takes two-thirds to approve a treaty and then they don't say anything about approving the president's nominees, that means it's a simple majority. There's seven places in our Constitution where they lay out more than a simple majority. These guys knew how to say more than a simple majority. And they didn't say it. And a lot of different places, like presidential nominees, like these budget things, and it's nonsense. And it's totally illegal. And that is what is wrong, is in when one house passes a law, and like House of Representatives says this is a good idea, like they send it over to the Senate. Well, then the Senate should vote on it. I mean, vote it up, vote it down. Vote it up, vote it down, change it. Do what you need to do, but vote. And what's going on out there is they don't vote. I don't know if you all remember the Keystone Pipeline. It was back, I don't remember when some senator from Louisiana put it to a vote, knowing it wouldn't pass. And it would have got vetoed anyway, but she just wanted to grandstand to show her constituents she's trying to get the pipeline or whatever she was doing. But I think it had 58 votes. And I'm not a math whiz, but I'm pretty sure 58 is more than a majority. But it didn't pass because they had a rule that said it took more. And so they passed these rules that prevent things from getting voting on. And that is what is going on. That is why the machine has ground to a halt. Another example is when the Senate passed the immigration bill. I don't remember. It was 2013. Maybe that's when it was. And member John Boehner was up there mocking his own party in the House. And he was, you know, doing boo-hoo, they don't want to vote, it's too hard. So he didn't put it to a vote. And that's called the Hastert rule, that if the majority of the majority don't want to vote on something from the other chamber, then they don't have to. And so I don't know why he just didn't say, I don't care if you don't want to vote, vote. Well, why didn't they want to vote? Nobody wants to vote on that one. If you're a Republican, you risk, or a Democrat, you risk alienating either the Hispanic population or the people who don't want them here. And so that's why they like not having to vote, because then they don't have to answer for their votes. And I just don't know why nobody seems to really care that this is what they're doing. You have the political, I mean, there's a lot of constitutionalists out there. And if you want to be a constitutionalist, this should be your primary issue. Don't change the rules of the Constitution. You can do whatever rules you want in your own chamber when it comes to how do we create a law that we're going to propose. I don't care how you do that. But when one chamber says to the other chamber, we think this is a good idea, no one person should be able to say, I don't care, if, you know, because most of these people don't want to vote on that, so we're not going to vote. That's complete disenfranchisement of our representative, and we're a representative democracy. So that is the answer to the essay question. No, it's not constitutional. The nuclear option was referring to repeal of this 60% rule. Well, it's not nuclear option. That'd be called going back and following the document the way it's written. I mean, our founders hated political parties. They did not foresee that they would come back around. Political parties were viewed as the lowest form of existence for anybody who was involved in the government. They just thought they would tear the country apart, and if they would have foresaw them coming back around, they would have actually made them illegal. And you can't do it now. You got a freedom of association. They can do what they want, but we need to get them under control, both sides. And I was advocating this as soon as President Trump was appointed, and you had an entire Republican Congress and a Republican president, and people are like, what are you, crazy? You're just going to take the brakes off? I'm like, yes, we are. Make these people do their job. You get a hold of whoever and ask them. Say, this is what this guy is saying. And it does say seven other places that you can have more than a simple majority, but it doesn't say it anywhere else. So why are you doing it? And I've put this question to many, many, many constitutional law professors, and not a one of them has a good answer for me. And generally their answer is, well, you can't really challenge the rules of the House, and that is rubbish. You absolutely can. There was just a quick example. There's a thing called the Committee of the Whole in the House of Representatives. All that is the entire House in committee, in one committee. They're not convened as the House. They're convened in a committee of the whole House. So what they're doing is, let's take a vote on this bill so we don't look foolish if it doesn't pass when we do convene. It's fine. Well, it was sometime in the 80s that the Democrats let the territories, like Guam, Puerto Rico, they let them on the Committee of the Whole. You know, those places don't get to vote, but they're on the Committee of the Whole. They're not voting on anything, right? They're just there. Well, the Republicans took them to court and said, that's diluting my vote, even though they're not voting on anything. And the district court in D.C. agreed. So if having a few people on a committee that doesn't do anything dilutes your vote, how is it that not being allowed to vote at all doesn't dilute your vote? How is it that going from a 50 to a 60% doesn't dilute your vote? When it was a simple majority, I just had to get one other guy to vote with me to get to 51. Now I've got to get 11. So that is what's wrong. That's what they're not doing. That's when somebody says they're not doing their job out there, they only have one job, vote, and they don't do it. I want to thank you all for listening. I don't have an essay question for you or contest this time. So I hope you've enjoyed the program. If you have any questions or want me to talk about anything at all, it's commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Thank you and have a great afternoon.
K246CU, 1450 KBFI Bonners Ferry, 1400 KSPT Sandpoint, a Blue Sky Broadcasting radio station.